Welcome to the South Cars Conference number 96140. Connection established.
I'm going to sign with you. We've got 2 minutes to net. I've got a couple of things to get ready for it, Michael. Thank you, sir. Nice to see you aboard. KY6B.
K7KJQ, clear.
Good evening, everyone. This is South Cars, the South Coast Amateur Radio Service. This net is conducted under the guidelines of the South Cars organization and further follows the rules outlined in SCC Part 97 and Good Amateur Practice. Our server is supplied by the Great Lakes Reflector System, and all contacts and requests for information will be handled through the net control. When contact with another station is made, please move off this system and establish your contact direct so that the net may continue. In fairness to all, short-time stations will not be recognized as such. All stations will be worked in the order in which they entered the system. However, this evening we are doing the TNT Open Forum. Information regarding our HF operation may be found at www.southcars.com, and for our digital operation, which you're listening to tonight, at www.voip.southcars.com. Your net control session for this evening is myself, KJ4PUJ. My name is Tony. I'm located in the lower Florida Keys, where the temperature is currently 77 degrees Fahrenheit, about 23 degrees Celsius, winds gusting up to 26 knots out of the east. Prior to starting, I would like to ask if there was any emergency traffic. If so, please come now. Hearing none, do we have any birthdays this week? Okay, hearing nothing on the birthdays. Tonight, we are doing the TNT Open Forum. We are continuing with our Back to Basics series presented by KY6V Gordon, who will take over here just momentarily. And before we get started, I just wanted to ask, are there any outstanding announcements or anything like that up front that we need to do? So I know we have a couple people that can't stay through the whole show. Okay, hearing none. Again, this is the TNT Open Forum. My name is Tony, KJ4PUJ. I'm located in the lower Florida Keys. And at this time, I'd like to introduce my friend and a radio Elmer extraordinaire, KY6B. Gordon, the floor is yours, sir.
Thank you very much, Tony. What a nice, warm welcome. Good evening, everybody. Gordon, KY6V, reporting for duty here from Central Florida. And we've had a very nice day. Wind was up just a little higher than normal, but nevertheless, worth being alive. We're going to continue in the series here on Back to Basics. Started here a month or so back. And we try to do a session at the start of each month, and we'll probably be concluding this here next month as I see things unfolding, I guess I should say. At this point, we have covered frequency, the human voice, the microphone, an RF transmitter. Tonight, we're going to talk about receivers. And then, additionally, we're going to follow on with power supplies, antennas, digital communication, and troubleshooting techniques. So let me refresh everybody's timers, and we'll get started here talking about receivers, if I may. This is KY6V for the South Cars TNT. We've learned so far to build a voice-modulated transmitter. One starts with voice frequencies on one hand and a bass oscillator frequency on the other. This progression is up in frequency generally in predetermined steps. A receiver is just the opposite. It starts with a higher operating frequency and builds down to the audible listening frequencies. This is much like climbing a ladder with a transmitter and climbing down the ladder with a receiver. Receivers are just another interesting aspect of the hobby. It also has a great history, I might add. Crystal sets to regenerative, to super regenerative, to heterodyne, to super heterodyne, etc. Within all of when all of this is really a basic need that needs to be maintained. A receiver must have a sensitive front end. This is to say that the first stage, that which is connected to the antenna, must be capable of hearing weak signals and yet select enough to allow adjacent frequencies not to interfere with the process. Now, modern-day receivers like superheterodynes employ generally 9 discrete stages to accomplish the overall task. They are an RF stage, that's the front end, a first mixer oscillator. Now, we're going to get into these in some detail. First IF intermediate frequency, second mixer oscillator, second IF demodulator, and an audio amplifier. Sounds like it's a little bit involved, but it's not bad, and we're going to try to explain this to you. There are other circuits such as a squelch, a BFO, that's a beat frequency oscillator, LCD readout, liquid crystal display, if you will, S-meter, and so on, but those previously mentioned constitute the main ballgame. So let's look at each one of these circuits independently, and if you will, allow me to refresh everybody's timers. Let's talk about the RF stage front end first. As mentioned before, we want to have the most sensitive circuit possible to hear the weak signals. To discriminate against off-frequency signals, we need somewhat of a selective front end. This, in most part, is a high-Q circuit, very selective, but not selective enough to hamper tuning the entire band. The signals received by this stage are then routed to the first mixer. Now, talking about the first mixer and the first oscillator, this stage is a melting pot which combines the incoming signal with the frequency, and here's that word again, we've been beating that right on the head, you can't get away from frequency, of the first mixer oscillator. The result is yet a different frequency from the two mentioned and is equal to the first IF intermediate frequency. This process of mixing is also called heterodyning. And heterodyning occurs when two different frequencies occurring at the same time will mix together and create two additional frequencies. One, the sum of both of the original frequencies, and the second, the difference between the original frequencies. So using our 7.2 megahertz frequency as the incoming signal, and using a mixer oscillator frequency of, let's say, 17.9 megahertz, you do the math, would create an IF frequency of 10.7 megahertz. That's 17.9 minus 7.2 equals 10.7. 10.7 megahertz is and has been one of the popular frequencies of manufacturers' IF design for quite a while. Let me buy another nickel for everybody's persuasion here. All right, now we're going into the first IF. And this whole process is trying to streamline where you only want to be listening to what you want to be listening to, okay? The first IF, this is a circuit or circuits, normally more than one, that tightens your skirts. If you're male, I guess you could say it tightens your belt. It narrows the bandpass to a point where only the desired signal will pass. It is like a tunnel, which is formed around the desired frequency, and the walls of the tunnel, the diameter, are closed so tight that nothing can squeak through but the desired signal. Think about it that way. That's exactly how it works. Manufacturers sell, as options, IF filters that are designed for specific applications. Case in point, one can purchase a CW filter that is so narrow it is unusable for voice translation. On the other hand, they sell voice filters that will pass up to, but not beyond, about 2.5 kilohertz. So the IF stages receive a signal from the first mixer, purifies the signal, if you will, and passes it on to the second mixer. Again, let me refresh, please. This is KY6V for the South Cars TNT. We're discussing receivers tonight on our open forum. I'd like to get into the second mixer and second mixer oscillator at this point. Now, this is all a chain reaction, you know, right from the front end to where we are right now. Like the first mixer above, the principle is the same. The signal from the first IF enters into the mixer at the same time that a signal from the second IF mixer's oscillator arrives, and the resultant frequency is equal to the desired second IF. So in most cases, the second IF frequency is 455 kilohertz. So if we continue with the example frequency from above, the input to the mixer is 10.7 megahertz. That's the frequency of the first IF. The local oscillator would be producing a frequency of 11.155 megahertz, resulting in an output frequency of 455. Simple math, 11.155 minus 10.7 equals 455. Now, in this second IF, the second IF, to some degree, assists the process of selectivity. However, this lower frequency, 455 kilohertz, is our example in a convenient frequency to use for separation of the audio modulation from the RF carrier frequency that has been piggybacking on. So the output of the second mixer sent an input to the second IF stage, which in turn allowed the demodulator to start its extraction process. Now we're going to get into demodulators. This is where we peel the orange, if you will. I'm going to refresh KY6V here. All right, the demodulators, as in the modulation process mentioned before regarding transmitters, the demodulator in a receiver is application dependent. We have amplitude detectors for AM, FM detectors called discriminators for FM, product detectors for a single sideband, and beat frequency oscillators for CW, and so on. Let it be said that a demodulator extracts the base audio from the RF carrier to which it had originally been inserted. So the 455 IF is the catalyst from which the demodulator has extracted the resonant audio, placed it back in a form equally, hopefully, to that of the original dude that was speaking into the microphone, and sends it to an audio amplifier for further processing. Sort of a long way to go around your elbow to get to your thumb, but that's it, and it's sort of neat. Now, the audio amplifier stage, the guy just prior to your speaker, if you will, this is where the proof of the pudding is realized. The low-level audio coming from the demodulator is amplified, hopefully with a flat response, and allowed to be passed to a speaker when one is plugged into the output jack. All the sins, if any, are realized at this point. Either the audio sounds great, sounds just like the person talking into the microphone, or something fell through the cracks, something was not done correctly, and the result sounds like heck. Now this is the point when everything is working correctly, you say, "Hey honey, come here, I think I hear someone on my speaker." Before we go into the next section, I'm going to turn it over to Tony and let you open it up for any questions, either from you, Tony, or anybody that's standing tall. KY6V, back to you, sir.
Thank you, sir. And I will start with the questions. For those that may be new into the hobby or not as technically adept, it seems like on the VHF, UHF frequencies, you just dial in and you type in your six-digit or seven-digit frequency, and there you are. how does this affect the HF side? And you can use the bus as an example, where you have to dial in, you know, 7251.
I'm not sure that I totally understood that question. So let me parlay it, and then you can tell me if I need to take it further or to a different context. You know, you dial up a frequency on HF these days just like you dial up a frequency on 2 meters or 440. The difference is, you know, you have an LCD display in front of you, and you want such and such, and you dial it up, and you got it. The frequency conversions at HF within that black box are obviously different than the frequency conversions that are taking place at 2 meters. I was trying to hit hard that this mixing or heterodyning process is really the answer for the conversion that happens in a receiver. Two frequencies come in and a second frequency of choice is picked, either the sum or the difference thereof. So on HF, you're going to be working with different frequencies to result to where you want to go, and the same thing will happen on 2 meters and 440. You're going to be working with considerably higher frequencies that are mixing together to get you where you want to go. Now, how far afield of your question did I lead you? Over.
As usual, you were right on the money. Thank you, sir. And with that, I'm going to ask if there's anybody else out there that's listening, whether you're signed in through EchoLink or IRLP, or you're connecting through an RF repeater. If you have a question for Gordon, KY6V, regarding what he's been talking about in the Back to Basics series, please come now with your suffix only. Okay. Seems they're all paying attention this evening, sir, so I will turn it back over to you.
Thank you, Tony. That's either the case or I'm putting them to sleep, and I hope it's not the latter. All right, Gordon here, KY6V for SAFCAR's TNT. We're going to continue on and leave receivers and get into power supplies in a moment, but again, I want to amplify that. The receivers are not intense in design. They work very well, and in our state of the art are doing just an exceptional job to take a signal that's less than a microvolt, separated from all of the hash that comes along with it, and bring it out crystal clean out of your speaker. The whole processing is the selectivity that's built in the IF stages, the sensitivity that's built in the input stage, and in a good receiver, the ground floor level, the noise level, is quite minimal. Signal and noise level is very important, not only in a piece of equipment, but in the noise level that may be resonant around your home and your antennas. All right, I'm going to reset here, and then we're going to start in the power supplies, KY6V. Okay, there appears to be more power sources available today than Carter has little liver pills, and that is a fact. We have batteries, automotive high amperage cranking, deep cycle long lasting alkaline throwaways, NiCad rechargeables, and an assortment of AC power supplies from a few volts at low current to high voltage at high current. I will say that I have personally worked with supplies as low as millivolts, delivering just a few milliamps to power supplies working at 30,000 volts and delivering one nasty level of amperage. So it's just a very broad field. The decision-making process in choosing a power supply is rather straightforward. First, you ask yourself, what voltage or voltages do I need to operate the equipment I intend to use? Second, you determine what the maximum current draw will be at a maximum consumption. This can be established by looking over your specification sheets or possibly just placing an amp meter in series with the equipment to determine what you're dealing with. Some directions for power supply needs are obvious. If you have a mobile radio to be used while commuting or traveling, then obviously you would use the car battery. The only thing to remember is to use large enough wire straight from the battery to handle your needs, and secondly, fuse that line at the battery, not at the radio. Equipment that requires 12 volts can be run in the house, either off an AC power supply or a battery source. And there are some nice battery cases, I might mention, available on the market to protect your house interior. You know, you don't want the acid getting on the rugs and that kind of stuff. Should you choose to go that direction? A trickle charger can be left floating on the battery all the time to keep things running. And with all of this in mind, it looks let's look at an AC power supply basic as though you were going to build one. I'm going to refresh here, KY6V for South. All right, since most of the equipment today is of solid state design, but not all, I might add, requires 12 volts DC to function. You will find that the circuitry, for the most part, is very common among different design manufacturers. Different means of voltage regulation or protection may be used, along with different techniques in rectifying the AC. But no matter how you look at it, it's AC in and it's DC out. The basic design of a power supply starts with the AC cord that's plugged into the wall socket, with one wire going to one side of the power transformer primary and the other going through a fuse, through an on and off switch to the other side of the primary of the transformer. The secondary of the transformer can take several different approaches depending on the design. It can be a half-wave rectifier, full-wave rectifier, bridge rectifier, and so on. For simplicity, we will discuss the half-wave design. First, the half-wave, we ground one side of the secondary of the power transformer and connect the positive side of a rectifier diode to the other side of the secondary. The purpose of the diode is to change the AC on the secondary to DC on the cathode side of the diode. Now, this is accomplished by the diode only passing the positive portion of the AC cycle. And at this point, we have what is called pulsating DC. This is because we still have a partial AC component on the DC line, that being the positive side of the AC referenced above. We then place a capacitor between the cathode line and ground of sufficient size to filter that AC component off the cathode line, producing now a pure DC voltage. Bingo! We have a 12-volt supply. The only problem is that we have not regulated the supply yet, but we'll do so in the next paragraph. A refreshing, please. All right. Generally accepted practice is to use a number of pass transistors whose base circuitry is controlled by a voltage regulator. The number of transistors is dependent on current capabilities of the design as the power transformer, as is the power transformer, and, of course, the rectifier components. Basically, the filtered cathode line is connected to the collector of the pass transistor. The emitter of the transistor is connected to the positive output terminal of the supply. The base. Now, I want you to listen about this. This is where it's important. The base junction of the transistor is routed to one point of the voltage regulator integrated circuit, while yet another sampling line is brought back from the emitter junction to the IC. As the output voltage attempts to change or vary, the IC regulator senses this change and produces a change in the base control voltage of the pass transistor, keeping it within the regulation tolerance required. So it's the mother bear. It's watching the output. It has a reference voltage that it is looking at, and it keeps the overall system right where it should be. Refreshing, please, from KY6VIX. All right, for those of you that will be using tube equipment, a little bit different. Obviously, your needs will be different. The power transformer, rectifier, and filtering circuits will still be the same. You will need a plate supply, a screen supply, and a filament supply. The filament supply will not need a rectifier circuit, and there are two possibilities for your other needs. You might choose to have two separate power supplies for your plate and screen needs, or use a common supply with a tap load resistor off the plate supply. The resistor approach would also provide you with a bleeder for safety reasons. This approach is usable, providing you do not have a stringent requirement for regulation. So these are all factors that you have to take in. That sort of winds up a real short on power supplies. Before we go into digital, I'm going to turn it back to Tony, see what questions we may have. We've got 21 people connected. Somebody's got to give me a bad time out there, or this wouldn't have been worth it. Tony's already tried it. I'll bet he'll try again. Go ahead, Tony, from KY6V. Over.
Understood, sir. What's and you're right, I am going to lead off with another question and get folks a chance to gather their thoughts. KJ4PJ here. Besides the safety concerns when dealing with electrical issues, have you got any other recommendations for folks, again, who may be new to this or not so technically adept?
Well, that's a subject in itself, Tony, but I'll hit the highlights. Keep one hand in your back pocket, guys and gals. If you don't have a back pocket, you know, stick it under your belt or something. You don't want, if you get across something you shouldn't get across, you don't want it to go across your body and through your heart and give you, your last rites. The safety factor is when you're working on something hot, but something that's still plugged in. Keep one hand in your pocket. The best advice that I can give, Tony, is don't get in there unless you know what you're doing. It could kill you. Make sure the equipment is unplugged. It is no longer plugged into the wall socket if it's an AC power supply. The second big thing is that if there's no bleeder in these power supplies, and a lot of them don't have bleeders, the filter capacitors will stay charged. And they'll stay charged for weeks. When I was a kid right out of college, one of our pranks was to take a charged capacitor and throw it to somebody, and they'd catch it, and they'd go, wow! Well, that's not very healthy either. So you need a crowbar, you need a big screwdriver, you need some kind of a gadget that you can run across the two terminals, the positive and negative, on these filter capacitors, and make sure they're discharged and you don't have any sparks or sprecks. I'll tell you, some of those will those filter capacitors, depending on the size of the supply, will almost blow the tip off of a large screwdriver. So don't get in there, number one, if you're not familiar with it. Number two, take the safety precautions that I just mentioned, and in most cases you're going to be okay. Back to you, sir, KY6VIX.
Understood, and I'm just going to bring this up real quick because Mike CDQ put it in the text box. Would you touch briefly on grounding and how it relates to this lesson?
Well, grounding is sort of a subject of its own. From a safety standpoint, I'm not sure that it has a lot of play, to be very honest with you, Tony. It comes into ground loops, RF applications that don't get where they need to get, and you get hot chassis, particularly your transceivers, You got a metal microphone, as an example, like a stand mic, and you're holding on that metal mic, and you go over and you touch the cabinet of your radio while it's transmitting, and it burns you. That's because you don't have a good ground. from a safety standpoint, I will say this, most of the power supplies are three-wire input from your wall socket. Don't run with just the neutral and the hot. Make sure you're running with a safety ground. So from that standpoint, use a three-wire system. Don't go back to the old two-wire, particularly the old two-wire where you could plug them in either or. You know, nowadays we've got one pin that's a little bit bigger. Go ahead, Tony, over.
Roger that, and thank you, sir. You hit the highlights as always. And I agree, the safety and the grounding issues we could do a whole other series on. I'm going to break with you momentarily long enough to let VE2XPL, Pete up in Montreal, he has a question for you. Come aboard, Pete.
KJ4PUJ, KY6V, and everybody on the net, good evening. This is VE2XPL in Montreal, cold Montreal. It's only minus 4 degrees. That's minus 4 of your degrees, by the way. Minus 20 up here. So we played inside most of the day. My question very quickly, I'm just wondering, you know, we have access to new gear. We have access to old gear. We have access to all kinds of stuff. Do we have to concern ourselves with regulated versus non-regulated power supplies when it comes to older gear and newer gear? Back to you, Gordon.
Well, that's a pretty doggone good question, Pete. Good evening to you, sir. I'm not sure I can answer it in its entirety. You know, it depends on the equipment that you're running. You know, if you're running a linear amplifier, as an example, you want good regulation in that power supply. You've got screen voltage that you're dealing with and so on and so forth. There's an interesting facet here that may be taking this too far, but your solid-state transceivers of today's vintage normally have 5-volt and 8-volt regulators built into the unit, into the black box, okay? For these regulators to operate efficiently, they have to have at least a volt to a volt and a half of headroom, higher voltage that is feeding that particular regulator. So I'm saying all this to say that in the case of the 8 volt, it should have 9.5 or 10 volts. So if you're feeding it with a 12 volt power supply, or a 12-volt battery, and that 12-volt battery gets down, or that power supply gets down to that critical headroom that that 8 volts is wanting, that volt and a half, once it reaches there, that radio is going to quit on you. The LCD is going to start blinking, and you're going to say, what the heck, Pete, over?
Yeah, roger that, roger that. Sounds good. The second question, real quick, I don't know if you have any recommendations for, you know, many of us have one good power supply, perhaps, and three or four radios. And how do you manage connecting to all these radios? Do you recommend the various distribution, power distribution systems that exist out there, or do we just have an octopus of power wires sticking out the power supply? Back to you.
Well, I've used them all, and you know, I've taken five radios and soldered the power supply lines all together with a common feed. It just raises heck when you need to move the power supplies and you want to change radios, and it's a different cable. And ideally, you can make the strip yourself. You don't have to go out and buy one, although they're reasonably priced from what I can tell. MFJ, as an example, has some nice ones, where you can tie the power supply into one end of this strip and then wing lug in all of your other radios up to as many as you need. Over.
Yeah, okay, roger that. Always good to get somebody else's opinion. I like to try to keep things clean. Although if you saw a picture of the shack, you'd agree that I'm failing miserably. But, you know, always looking for improvements and, you know, If it was perfect, I'd have nothing to do anyway. So no, that's it for me. I'll turn it back to Net Control and see if there's any other questions, I guess. And thanks for coming back and answering those. I appreciate you. And I am here if you need me. V2XBL Montreal, back to Net Control.
All right, KJ4PUJ. Make sure you get that cow lined up here in the near future. I'm going to break with Pete and Gordon briefly because K6SUN wishes to come aboard and she has some general comments and she has an early day tomorrow, so we're going to pause in the program for just a moment and let her come aboard. Ms. Sunshine, it's all yours.
All right. Thank you, Tony, and thank you, Gordon, and everyone that's connected this evening. I just wanted to make some general comments about his Back to Basics. It greatly helped me when I was studying for my general as well as my extra, and he's doing a great presentation. So if you haven't, anyone that's connected haven't maybe downloaded his PowerPoint. I'm not sure if it's PowerPoint or just basic information. It's highly valuable. It really helped me when I was taking my test. That's pretty much what I wanted to say. I do have an early evening. I'm probably going to eat soon and try to continue listening, but I had an early morning and I'm probably going to have to hit the sack soon, but I did want to make those comments to everyone. And I want to thank everyone again for joining us. And please do ask questions of Gordon. He's a valuable source of information, and I hope that you will come aboard and ask him these questions. But NXI, Gordon, and Tony says he seems to be having double voices come over. He's not hearing both of you, so I told him to reconnect. So, and once again, I want to thank everyone and any new people out there that are listening. This is a very valuable TNT this evening, and I just wanted to say it helped me greatly. So I'll turn it back to you, Tony, PUJ, and you can turn it over to our Master of Ceremonies. But thanks so much, Gordon, for doing this evening. This is Kilo 6 Sierra United November.
Thank you, Kathy. As always, your comments are always welcome. And if we do have anybody listening tonight who is not a South Cars VOIP member and you wish to join us, just shoot us an email at voip@southcars.com and we'll get you all signed up. It's free, everything we do, all the programs.
Welcome to the Echolink test server.
Welcome to the South Cars conference number 96140. Connection established.
Thank you very much, sir, and thank you, Kathy, for those kind words. You know, this particular group of things we're talking about, have been talking about here for a couple of months, sir, a document that I wrote back in February 2004. And I'll tell you why I wrote it, guys and gals. I was getting very concerned that we, as a fraternity, are turning into plug-and-play operators. We go out and we purchase at the family a candy store a black box, and we plug it in, and we push the button on the microphone, and we start talking. If the darn thing stops working, we put it back in the box, we send it back to the factory, and hopefully your warranty is still good. And if it isn't, you know, you pay some money to get it fixed. And have no idea of what goes on inside. And a lot of these things you can take care of yourself, and we're going to be touching on some of that when we get to basic troubleshooting. So that was a reason for Back to Basics, and I think it's helping out also in the class courses that South Cars is offering now also. Let me refresh the system, and we're going to start talking about digital communication. Digitizing something, and that will probably be the last section for this evening. Give me a pause for just a second, please. All right, this is KY6V for South Cars and the TNT. We're going to start talking about digital. Let's say that in the beginning, that it came to pass that nothing happened. Isn't that a bummer? Was this because everything was in a zero state? Please think about that. Have you ever stopped to think that you can simulate the digital process by simply turning your light switch on and off? The digital world consists of zeros and ones, or highs and lows, or ons and offs. And if you had the ability to turn a single-pole, single-throw toggle switch on and off at the speed of light, you would have the fastest computer in the world. Think about that. Simplicity. Let's talk about mathematics and ASCII. I'm not sure who fell out of bed, hit their head, and came up with this, but it's neat. If you think of Morse code as a language of dots and dashes, this is a language of zeros and ones. The concept is built around the mathematical progression of binary and hexadecimal numbers. Binary base 2, while hexadecimal is a based on 16. Since this is a system of numbers and computers only handle numbers digitally, an ASCII coding format evolved. Now, example, it is universally agreed that a number 101 is an A. A number 102 is a B. And so on through the alphabet. Numbers are also assigned to such functions as print, carriage return, etc. Now, if you're interested in seeing the entire list, it may be found on the following address, http://www.ascii-table.com, or you can just simply search for that. I'm going to refresh the timers, please. This is KY6V for South Cars. The digital industry has created, in my opinion, their own dictionary. For the most part, it's very well done. I have problems with the gross amount of acronyms that fly by on a daily basis, and I'm going to be very honest about that. When a person says, "How's your ATR?" I say, "What?" You know, what he's really asking is, "How is your automatic terminal recognition?" Einstein was asked one day for his telephone number, and he says, "I don't know the number." He further stated that that he purposely refused to waste space in his mind for things that could be looked up when needed, such as the telephone book. So when you need to look up something, try a search. That's the easiest thing as to trying to put all of this in your memory. A few words, more often than not, that are used: bits, bytes, kilobits, kilobytes, megabits, megabytes, digital word, throughput, and packet or packets. Now, a bit is one binary entry, either a 0 or a 1. A byte is equal to 8 bits. This is also considered a digital word. Think about that. That's important. Kilobits, kilobytes, megabits, megabytes are all associated with the speed of the bit or the byte in either 1,000 per second or 1,000,000 per second. Throughput is the measurement of the system performance from start to finish. I'm looking up the screen here. I don't want to time out. This is to say from sender to receiver or vice versa. A packet is an interesting approach to make an orderly flow of information. Generally speaking, it takes the binary word or words and packetizes it with an additional control criteria and sends it off to its destination. The original information that is to be conveyed has a sequential number added to say this is packet number one and this is packet number two and so on, so that if these packets get out of sequence during the transmission, they can be reassembled at the receiving location. Embedded within this package are additional control features such as parity and checksum, which simply maintains the credibility of the packet being sent. Should these areas denote an error, the packet is requested from the receiver to be retransmitted by the sender. It is then reinserted in the proper sequence, and the receiver location due to the original sequence control number mentioned above. So they've got it pretty well figured out. Let me refresh, please. I believe at this point it is important to spend a moment or two on the subject of speed and bandwidth, and I'm going to go through this quickly. But to start with, there's a Mr. Alan M. Fowler, F-O-W-L-E-R, has an interesting website on the issue of speed as related to dial-up modems. This site will give you some insight as to the problems encountered with speed and bandwidth. Without getting into controversy on broadband and wideband, let's just say they are synonymous. Here is a quote on the subject, a little dry but nevertheless meaningful. Wideband, the property of any communication facility, equipment, channel, or system in which the range of frequencies used for transmission is greater than 0.1% of the mid-band frequency. Wideband has many meanings depending on application. Wideband is used to distinguish it from narrowband, obviously, where both terms are subjectively defined relative to the implied context. They sure try to make this hard on somebody, don't they? In communication security systems, a bandwidth exceeding that of normally 4 kilohertz telephone channel, the property of a circuit that has bandwidth wider than normal for the type of circuit, frequency, or operation, or type of modulation. And in telephone, the property of a circuit that has bandwidth greater than 4 kilohertz, pertaining to a signal that occupies a broad frequency spectrum. All right, let's put this all in some easy context. To put it bluntly, telephone lines will not handle the average user's needs. Its limitation of 3KC makes the cheese binding even with the multiplexing techniques available with current modems. The quicker the transition period of the incident, the more spectral frequency area is needed. So I want you to do something for me, and I'm going to refresh just to be on the safe side. Stand by. All right, I saw a key up here, 6239. We're in a net process, please. We'll be right back with you when we can. This is KY6V for the TNT presentation this evening. Hey, I want you to draw a straight line across a piece of paper. Hey, grab your pencil. Grab a piece of paper. Straight line across the piece of paper will be 10 inches long. And call this line bandwidth. All right, mark the left side 0. Place a mark at 2/16 on the line. You may want to take notes on this and do it later. And mark that 28 kilohertz landline modem. Now I want you to mark another line at 4/16 and mark that 56 KC, and that's a landline modem. Now mark another line at 6 inches from the left to the right. Call that 1.5 megahertz. That's T1 service, okay? T1 cable service. Mark your last line at 9 inches and call that 2.2 megahertz, which is cable, referred also to broadband cable. Now, you have a spectral display here. 2.2 megahertz means that there are 2,200,000 incidences per second requiring a bandwidth of 2,200,000 hertz or 2.2 megahertz of space. Allah, higher speed, more bandwidth. Okay, that's all we're going to cover on digital tonight. We are 51 minutes in the hour, not doing too bad. At least I hope not, Mr. Bus Driver. Back to you, Jimmy, KY6V, over.
No. Thank you, sir. KJ4PUJ here. I followed that quite well. Then again, I have the material, and I have had the material for several months, so I've had a chance to read it several times. Which brings me to my next point. If anybody wants a copy of this material, it is available. You can send us an email to voip@southcars.com, and we'll get you a copy of it. It's also posted on the website at www.voip.southcars.com. And having said that, I'm going to pause long enough. If anybody has a question, please come now with your suffix only.
NXI.
Okay, Mike. Looks like you're the only one with a question at the moment. Go ahead and ask your question.
All right, Tony. I hope I can stay hooked up here long enough to ask this. But control packets and data packets is digital stuff, so that would mean that this program right here is kind of the same kind of a program as old RIDI and old packet radio and stuff like that. That's what I'm guessing anyway. I was looking at the little box at the top that says statistics, and it had control packets and out of sequence and missed and stuff like that. So I was wondering if that's on the same line as packet radio.
All right. May I answer that, Tony?
By all means, sir. Your knowledge far outpasses mine.
Thank you, sir. Hey, Mike. Good evening to you, sir. Nice to have you aboard. KY6V here. Basically, they're saying the protocols differ a little bit, and when I say the protocols differ a little bit, it's how the packet is pulled together, where the parity bit is registered in the packet, where the checksum information is requested. Packet radio, I was in very, very deeply for quite a number of years, and quite a number of years ago, I might add. I use a PK-25, I think, protocol. I got very, very deep into that. I could actually take a packet and break it back down into English. And you'll find that these things are just sequenced with all of these control features along with the text that you are trying to send. So the control features are to make sure it gets to its destination properly, and the text just flows as text. So the protocols differ a little bit in what we're using here on VOIP and what we were using in packet, but the basic concept is still there, but just a little bit different. RTTY, you need to hold out on this. RTTY uses a completely different language, Mike. Over.
All right, Gordon, I followed along fairly well with what you're saying. This is all new to me. I have been getting into digital a little bit, not really real familiar with it yet. It's still new to that also, but yeah, I was wondering that because the reason I asked is I clicked on that statistics thing and to try to figure out how come I keep cutting out and hearing two voices at the same time, and I was wondering if the packets where it says missed and out of sequence, maybe I was getting the missed packet at the same time I was getting a live packet. And is that possible?
No, I don't think so. I think we're going to have to talk this over one-on-one when your time permits. I think you have two issues. One is the capability of your sound card and the way the buffers are set up, okay? The second thing is I have a feeling that you've got a slower system that you're on right now. And that, in conjunction with the sound card, is giving you what's happening. The statistics in this Echolink program are excellent. It'll tell you dropouts. It'll show you when it's dropping out. It'll show you missed packets and so on and so forth. So it gives you a lead that, you've got a problem and you got to get deeper in it. But, Mike, with your permission, I'll send it back to you and see if you want to amplify on this. But let's talk about this. I'd like to learn more, when time permits, what kind of ISP system you're using, And, you know, is it wireless? Are you tied in with your neighbor's router or just what? Because there's something that isn't working right. Over.
Right. Yeah. When we have time, I don't want to keep the net tied up here, but I'd love to go over it with you. But right now I am tied up with my neighbors, but during the nets I go to my son's and I have a stronger signal, but I still have the same problem. Like you'll be talking, then it'll pause for a minute, and then it'll be great for a while, and then it'll pause a couple times. And it was doing that today on when I was trying to do the CW with you. I followed a couple words, and then it would pause, and I wasn't sure where you were. But anyway, I'd love to try to get it straightened out with you when you have time. And thanks again, Gordon, WA1NXI, and just carry on with the net, and I'll be listening as much as possible.
Well, maybe we can tie together sometime tomorrow and kick this around, Mike. Thank you very much, sir. And Tony, I noticed that there's a KJ4WPY. I haven't had my eyes too much glued on the text box here with everything that's been going on, but it looks like he's a brand new member, and I think that Kathy has piped him aboard, so you may want to let him say hello if he's still with us. So back to you, Tony. KY6V, over.
Roger that, sir. I've been monitoring the text box, and as usual, she is surprised the new person. Brian, KJ4WPY, would you care to come aboard and say hello to South Cars?
KJ4WPY. I'm from Orlando. I'm Newham, actually. I want to say hi to everyone, and it's cool to be here, actually. Passing out to the net.
All right, Brian. Well, welcome aboard, and congratulations on getting your license. I think if you can join us as often as you can, this is a pretty good group. And we have lots of interesting activities. We do free classes. We do RelaxNet. We do all kinds of things. Check out the website at VOIP.SouthCars.com. K6SUN will be sending you an email if he hasn't already done so by the time I finish this sentence, and it'll have all the information on that. And by all means, if you have any questions, send us an email.
All right. Thank you. And maybe I can later contribute something to you guys. I'm a computer engineer, and I also work at a radio station, so might be able to help. So back to you guys, KJ4WPY.
Well, outstanding, Brian. We're happy to have you aboard, and if you want to be put to work, seeing as I'm the VOIP net manager and the person presenting the class tonight is the recently retired VOIP net manager, I think between the two of us, we can find something for you to do.
All right. Sounds good. Going on to the net, KJ4WPY.
All right, Brian. I'm going to break with you, and thank you for dropping by. At this point, Gordon has wrapped up his presentation for the evening, so I'm going to make a last call. I'm going to call on the TNT executive producer, VE2XPO, Pete up in Montreal, who has a couple of announcements.
Yes, the executive producer. I was gonna put an echo in that, but then I was afraid it was gonna get stuck again like last week, and then I'd have everybody screaming at me in the text box. All right, thanks a lot, Tony. I appreciate that very much. Excellent presentation, Gordon. As always, very interesting. And as you know, the show notes for tonight will be posted on the website. As you know, we are recording. Well, if you don't know, now you do. We're recording this episode, and we post these to the Waveguides podcast website, which is also available through a link via the VOIP.SouthCars.com website. And we post these as podcasts every week. So if you cannot be here, of course, if you're not here, you're not listening to my voice, but you can tell your friends. Those of you who are here can tell your friends. That if they're not around, they can listen to the podcast. So check it out, VOIP.SouthCars.com. The link is on the left-hand side, or directly, www.waveguides.ca. Also, let me take a quick pause, and I'll tell you what's coming up in the next few weeks. All right. Up and coming, of course, March 10th, next week, we have an interview with the hosts of the Low SWR podcast, Rich, KD0BJT, and Brady, KD0BJS. Brady, who is with us this evening. Good evening to you, Brady. And perhaps your dad is in the background. Good evening to you, Rich, as well. So we'll be interviewing these two fine gentlemen about their podcast. So check them out, www.lowswr.com. Great podcast. I listen to it. They come out about twice a month on average. Also, March 17th, we're going to have the return, the triumphant return of Michael, KD0CDQ, who is going to be talking about Ham Radio, Let's Go to the Movies. So I look forward to that. March 24th is still question mark, still open. We leave a bunch of open episodes for last-minute guests. And on the 31st, we have the Open Forum, which is the roundtable-directed RAGJU. So we look forward to all those episodes. We hope you will join us in huge numbers. And with that, I'll say thanks to you guys again for being there, for presenting tonight. And I'll pass it back to Net Control, KJ4PUJ. Mike, back to you.
Okay, Pete, thanks. Last call for any questions for KY6V on his presentation this evening. This is KJ4PUJ from the Florida Keys. If you have a question for Gordon, please come now, suffix only. Okay, Gordon, seems like you once again answered all their questions up front. So I'm going to let you recap, however you want to phrase it, and whatever announcements you don't cover about upcoming classes and whatnot, I'll cover in the closing.
All right. Thank you, kind sir, and thank you, Pete. Gordon here, KY6V. I'll just summarize and say that this series of Back to Basics will probably wind up here, first session out of the bucket here in April. We're going to end up with discussing antennas and troubleshooting techniques, two things very, very close to my heart, and I'm going to enjoy getting into those two subjects. Brian, welcome to the South Cars fold. Sounds like we have a lot in common. We'll have to chit-chat when time permits. We're almost neighbors. I'm north of you in the DeLand area. You're down there in Orlando. I retired after 50 years from CBS in the engineering side of broadcasting television, so it sounds like we've got a lot we could kick around, and as Tony says, we can put you to work, Tiger. So that's not a threat, that's a promise, and I think we can have fun at the same time. Tony, I have nothing else. Thank you for all you're doing, Tony. KY6V, back to net.
Thank you, sir, for your presentation this evening and for always answering my questions. Having said that, if there is a presentation that you would like to make on either the TNT Open Forum or on the Sunday RAGJU, please send us an email to voip.southcars.com, kind of outline what you'd like to do, whether it's a one session or a series like Gordon's doing, and we'll be happy to take it under consideration. I can't guarantee that we'll do it, but I can guarantee that if it's related to ham radio and it's well thought out, you've got about a 97% chance of being able to present your material, subject to senior staff approval as always. I mentioned Sundays. We changed the name of the Sundays from the Trader's Net to the South Car Sunday RAGJU, and that was due in large part to lack of overall participation. However, we are going to allow folks to list, sell, or swap items a couple times an hour on Sundays. So if you've been tuning into the Trader's Net, please continue to tune in. It's just going to be more of a rag chew than a Trader's Net at this point. Let me buy another nickel. Okay, Pete, get that cow warmed up. This has been the South Coast Amateur Radio Service South Cars TNT Open Forum. The executive producer for the TNT Open Forum is B2XPL Pete up in Montreal. The net control station this evening has been myself, Tony, KJ4PUJ. From the Lower Florida Keys, and your host and moderator has been Gordon, KY6V. We are now going to return the server to normal amateur radio use, Thank you, everybody. 73s, good night, good day. For those of you down under that were listening, I saw you in the IRLP notes. Have a wonderful weekend, folks, and we'll talk to you soon. Pete, cue the cow. Good night, everybody, and thank you.
Thanks, Tony. I wasn't sure when to kill the recording, but I got the cow, Pete. Good night to you, sir. KY6V clear.
73s, gentlemen. Thank you to you guys, and thanks to everybody listening, hands, and SWLs alike. We'll talk to you guys next week, and I will be monitoring for a little bit. P2XPL Montreal. Talk to y'all soon.